to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanz in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Thursday, August 25th, 2022. South Sudan has recalled one of its diplomats accused of raping a woman in New York.
The leadership of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation took the decision to immediately recall the diplomat in question.
And the U.S. government has posted an envoy to Sudan after 3 decades of bad relationship between the two countries.
It's not just a message. It is something very big. It's an opening of a new chapter.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan government has recalled and suspended one of its diplomats accused of raping a woman in New York. South Sudan's Foreign Minister Ayik Deng says Charles Dickens Emene Oliha arrived in Juba Thursday and will be investigated by a specialized committee. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
South Sudan diplomat Charles Dickens Emene Oliha arrived in Juba earlier today. Minister Deng says his office decided to immediately recall Oliha from the United States, where he worked as a career diplomat at the country's permanent mission to the United Nations. He said Sunday's rape allegation is being investigated by a specialized committee.
It is with regret that our diplomat was involved in an alleged rape incident with one of New York City residents. The leadership of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation took the decision to immediately recall the diplomat in question, pending a full investigation from the specialized committee. The diplomat in question is now back in South Sudan and has been suspended from his duties, awaiting the outcome of this investigation.
Deng reiterated that the government of South Sudan, through the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, condemns any type of sexual misconduct, calling the act heinous and wholly unacceptable.
As a government, we have worked tirelessly since our inception to ensure that the rights of women and girls are protected. The Ministry of Public Service has worked with civil servants across the country to carry out sensitivity trainings. Beyond ratifying regional and international instruments for the protection of women and girls, we have also worked to receive directions from our gender and youth cluster to practically implement this instrument across the country. Because it is in our belief that living a life devoid of gender-based violence, and indeed the threat of it, is a right for all.
Minister Deng says the mandate of South Sudan Foreign is two-folded, protecting the interests of South Sudanese citizens abroad and promoting strong bilateral relations with the host countries.
It is regretful that in this alleged incident, the latter has been jeopardized. We are committed to working closely with relevant U.S. authorities to take the appropriate action following the outcome of all investigations. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs and indeed the extended government of the Republic of South Sudan stands with victims of sexual assault everywhere and is committed to continuing to safeguard all those at risk of sexual violence.
New York police took the 46-year-old diplomat in for questioning on Sunday, but he was released after claiming diplomatic immunity. A 24-year-old woman told police she was walking her dog around noon when the South Sudanese diplomat followed her inside the shared apartment building in Manhattan, and Holia forced his way into her apartment. The woman says he raped her twice. UN spokesman Stephan Dujarric said on Tuesday the UN is aware of the incident and that, quote, any alleged rape or sexual assault needs to be fully investigated. Rebecca Hamilton, an associate law professor at American University Washington College of Law, told VOA that the U.S. State Department can waive Olia's diplomatic immunity. She also said,
immunity means that this person can't be arrested while he is in his current position, but it is not a lifetime immunity. And so at some point, he will no longer be in this position, loses that diplomatic immunity, and a prosecution can proceed.
Hamilton says although most diplomats respect the laws of the country in which they are living, the number of cases of people claiming diplomatic immunity in recent decades has risen in New York, the headquarters of the United Nations. You have got to balance against problems that come with granting immunity to the huge benefit of having government operations, of having this immunity, said Hamilton. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaiding in Bor.
The new U.S. ambassador to Sudan is in Khartoum to take up his post after Washington removed Khartoum from lists of state sponsors of terrorism. Some Sudanese analysts say the appointment of Ambassador John Godfrey indicates the United States wants to assert its presence in the Horn of Africa as Sudan and other countries seek to build new ties with Russia. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
John Godfrey was named by the White House as the new ambassador to Sudan in early January. The U.S. Congress approved his appointment in July. Godfrey arrived Khartoum on Wednesday to assume his post as the first U.S. ambassador to Sudan in nearly 25 years. Ties between the United States and Sudan were severely strained under the three-decade rule of former President Omar al-Bashir, who was ousted in 2019. The U.S. permanently lifted a number of sanctions on Sudan in October 2017, saying Khartoum had begun addressing concerns about terrorism and human rights abuses against civilians in the country's Darfur region. The U.S. government blacklisted Sudan in 1993 as a state sponsor of terrorism, as the Bashir administration hosted al-Qaeda founder Osama bin Laden, who resided in the country for 4 years in the 1990s. The lifting of sanctions rescind measures imposed in 1997 related to terrorism concerns and other steps put in place in 2006 in connection with the conflict in Darfur. The sanctions were temporarily eased just before President Barack Obama left the office. His administration cited the same progress the Trump administration noted in 2017. The ambassador's arrival comes as Sudan reels from deepening unrest and a deteriorating economy, which worsened after last year's military coup. A statement released by the U.S. Embassy in Khartoum on Wednesday said Ambassador Godfrey will work to strengthen relations between the American and the Sudanese people and to support their aspirations to freedom, peace, justice, and a transition to democracy. It said Godfrey also looks forward to, quote, advancing priorities related to peace and security, economic development, and food security, end quote. Some Sudanese analysts say the ambassador's arrival can be interpreted in many ways. Political analyst and writer Meki Al-Maghribi says Godfrey's presence in Khartoum is a definite boost to relations between the two countries.
It's not just a message. It is something very big. It's an opening of a new chapter, because the United States is a country of institutionalism. So when they do an institutional step, it was based on studies and new plans.
Relations with Washington eased under Sudan's transitional government led by former Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok, but those ties quickly evaporated after last October's military coup led by Army General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, who disbanded the civilians-run government. Al-Maghribi says he believes the appointment of Ambassador Godfrey is timely, considering his previous work experience, including his stint as acting chief of the anti-terrorism unit at the State Department.
I think he's lucky because he spent more than 6 months waiting for this final appointment and final approval by the U.S. administration and the Congress. And I think he spent this time in how to study Sudan and the region. He speaks Arabic and he is well informed with Sudanese issue, among other Arab world and Africa.
Sudanese journalist Abdul Munim Abu Idris, who has followed U.S. foreign relations in the Horn of Africa for years, says the U.S. is increasing its presence in the Sudan to counter the expansion of Russia's presence in the area.
There's a great progress of some African countries' relation with the Russians, especially the movement of Russian in Sudan region, I mean the Horn of Africa and the Red Sea. For this, the Americans, they want a high-ranked diplomat to be in Khartoum so as he can manage to run the relation with the Sudanese government.
Haj Hamad, a political science lecturer at Khartoum University, expects Geoffrey will play a significant role in whatever political settlement is reached in Sudan. He says any move to favor the military component will not solve Sudan's problems.
There is a principal disagreement between civilians and the military. No longer they are tolerating any kind of sharing. Those who are going to extend such kind of partnership, I think they will still keep the country in this turmoil of street demonstrations, riots, strikes.
Godfrey worked as the acting counterterrorism coordinator and acting special envoy to the Global Coalition to Defeat ISIS. He formerly worked as the acting deputy chief of mission and political counselor at the U.S. Embassy in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, and as the U.S. deputy secretary of state's chief of staff. He also worked for international organizations in Baghdad, Iraq, Tripoli, Libya, and Damascus in Syria. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
The United Nations Humanitarian Coordinator for South Sudan is calling on the government to address the question of insecurity in the country's new roadmap for extending the transitional period. The United Nations says the roadmap does not show how the parties to the agreement will restore long-lasting peace and resettle refugees and internally displaced persons. For VOA News, Sheila Pony reports from Juba.
Speaking to reporters on World Humanitarian Day in Juba on August 18th, Sarah Nyanti, the United Nations Humanitarian Coordinator in South Sudan, said the roadmap sidestepped the question of restoring long-lasting peace and resettling refugees and IDPs as speculated in the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement.
The roadmap does not define how people live together peaceably. It doesn't define how communities coexist peaceably. At the household community level, we need for people to take responsibility to seek peace.
Earlier this month, the parties to the peace agreement announced a roadmap that extends the mandate of the transitional government of national unity by another 24 months. Officials said the extension is aimed at addressing challenges that impend the implementation of the peace agreement and ensure the transitional period ends smoothly. While presiding the government for introducing the new roadmap, Nyanati says she believes there are local solutions to sustained peace across the country. She says ordinary people are able to come up with their own ideas on how to restore peace within communities. Nyanati says to achieve lasting peace, people must take responsibility at the household and community level.
If you want your household to be in peace, you have peace. If you want your community to be in peace, you have peace. You reject any action that forces you to fight each other.
The UN official says her recent visits to Tonj, Wau, Abyei, Malakala, and Torit, she learned the people themselves have solutions to the country's problems. They just need leadership.
But South Sudan has local solutions. Because I go to the communities and I hear the local solutions, and we need to listen to the people of South Sudan all across this country. Go to these places, I see opportunity. I see strong young women. I see strong people who need direction, who need an opportunity to participate in their own development.
On food insecurity, Nyanat says in 2001, South Sudan's cereal need was 1.4 million metric tons, while the country produced only 800,000 metric tons of cereals. She says the United Nations was able to import about 200 metric tons of grain, leaving a gap of about 200,000 metric tons. Nyanat says South Sudan has the capacity to feed itself, but there must be peace in order for people to be able to produce their own food.
You have the land, the arable land, you have water, and you have the human resources. What are we missing? It's peace. That's the missing element. It's peace. And peace is not about the roadmap.
Speaking at the launch of the new roadmap earlier this month, President Salva Kiir said the decision to extend the transitional period was reached to allow a peaceful and fair conduct of elections aimed at changing the political situation in the country. The transitional period was supposed to be ended in early 2023 with a general election in February of next year. The new roadmap incites the parties in the unity government will hold elections either at the end of 2024 or in early 2025. For VOA News, I am Sheila Oponi in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, Tigrayan forces say Ethiopia's federal allies have attacked their positions. Stay tuned for that story after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you know any first aid techniques?
Come to think of this question, I thought I do, but seriously, I think I may not be able to do too well if there is any situation present. Maybe it's something I need to go and learn how to do. It could help somebody tomorrow.
During our school days, the Red Cross Society, the clubs that we joined, they taught us a lot. When a child runs high temperature, you sponge the child with water from the leg to the head. Then you just rush the person to the hospital for best treatment.
In case if you have drowned maybe from water, the first aid technique that is available to be given is a kiss of life to a person that has drowned into water.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Tigrayan forces say Ethiopia's federal allies have launched an offensive against their southern position in violation of a month-long ceasefire. But Ethiopia's government blamed the Tigrayan rebels for the flare-up in violence. Official told VOA Tuesday they are ready for peace talks mediated by the African Union. Henry Wilkins reports from Gambela, Ethiopia.
The Tigrayan People's Liberation Front, known as the TPLF, said Wednesday that troops from the National Defense Force and Amhara Regional Forces attacked its positions near Kobo in the Amhara region of Ethiopia. The report was later confirmed by the Reuters news agency. A statement from the TPLF command said Tigray's army is reliably ready to repulse this offensive and transition into a counter-offensive to liberate occupied sovereign Tigrayan territory and return our displaced people to their homes. The statement appeared to suggest the TPLF could respond with force. The Ethiopian government has since alleged that it was the TPLF which launched the attacks. A statement from the federal government called on the international community for support. The international community should also condemn the obvious belligerence of the TPLF, lest it become complicit in the unconscionable march of the TPLF to a third round of conflict. All those who profess to be committed to the stability of the region and humanitarian ideals should exert pressure on the TPLF to renounce violence and endorse peace, the statement said. The Ethiopian government says it has been laying the groundwork for peace talks with the TPLF, mediated by the African Union. On Tuesday, an Ethiopian government spokesperson, Selamowit Kasa, spoke to VOA.
The federal government has full confidence on the African Union and its high commission assigned to accommodate the peace talks. There is no plausible reason for Ethiopia to look for other entities to broker the peace efforts.
The TPLF, however, claims the AU is biased in favour of the federal government and will not come to the negotiating table without mediation by the Kenyan government and a resumption of basic services to the region, such as banking and humanitarian access, which have been blocked by officials in Addis Ababa. Getachew Reda, a TPLF spokesperson, criticised the government for favouring AU mediation on Monday in an op-ed published on the website of the Africa Report, a monthly news magazine. Ahmed Soliman is with UK-based research group Chatham House.
It's been very evident that both sides have been recuperating and preparing themselves for a renewed bout of fighting at the same time as talking about peace. And as we see today, as happened at the beginning of the war in November 2020, both sides have blamed the other for instigating the conflict. Really, this relapse into fighting in Tigray and northern Ethiopia should have been avoided at all costs.
William Davidson is an analyst for the International Crisis Group, a research organisation based in Belgium. He says all sides to the conflict need to talk with each other.
So this is a clear indicator that delay in talks has fed into this very volatile truce, and we see events that could mean a resumption of conflict. And I think there's an evident and urgent need for the external actors here, the African Union, Kenya's government, the US, etc., to try and get the parties not just to pause these latest hostilities, but also to actually sit round the table for talks where they can discuss all of their disagreements rather than making them preconditions for talks.
A humanitarian truce that was established in March between the two sides now appears to be at an end. Renewed fighting is likely to have a major impact on the humanitarian situation in Tigray. Humanitarian organisations say parts of the region could already be in a state of famine. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said Wednesday he is shocked and saddened by the renewed fighting and that Ethiopians have suffered enough. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Gambella, Ethiopia.
The World Food Programme's regional director, Corone Fleischer, says the number of people facing acute food insecurity around the world has more than doubled to 345 million since 2019 due to the COVID-19 pandemic, conflict and climate change. Before the coronavirus crisis, 135 million suffered from acute hunger around the world. Fletcher told Reuters the number have climbed since and are expected to jump further because of climate change and conflict, especially in the Middle East and Africa.
This region is very import dependent, and also because of its proximity to the Black Sea. It takes 2 months to come across the Atlantic with a vessel. It takes 10 days. So very much impacted by this. Now, the prices have gone up massively across the region, and that results in families not being able to put food on the table in the evening. They just can't afford it anymore. And it results in governments in this region, as you know, there are many large blanket subsidies. Prices for governments are going up massively for this. And then thirdly, you know, when food insecurity and hunger increases, WFP is supposed to be here and support the people. But our prices have gone up, our costs have gone up 45% on average since COVID. Yemen imports 90% of its food needs. Now, with prices going up that massively, more people get hungry.
Nigeria this week added rotavirus vaccine to its national program that is expected to prevent 50,000 deaths of children per year from diarrheal diseases. But the launch comes amid shortages of the vaccine in countries such as Cameroon, Kenya, Senegal, and Tanzania. Timothy Obiazu reports from Abuja.
The launch Monday coincided with the commemoration of Africa Vaccination Week, officials from the World Health Organization, the United Nations Children's Agency, as well as Nigeria's Health Ministry attended the launch in the capital. During the event, many young children received the vaccine for free, while authorities urged citizens to embrace the measure. Faisal Shribe is the executive director of the National Primary Healthcare Development Agency, NPHCDA.
To get the opportunity of taking it when they are taking other vaccines. We need to seize this opportunity, mothers, caregivers, so that our children will be protected from this virus.
Rotavirus is the most common cause of diarrhea disease in children under 5 years old. WHO says that globally, up to 200,000 children die each year from the disease. Authorities say the oral vaccine could prevent up to a third of severe diarrhea cases in Nigeria. WHO country representative Walter Kazadi Malumbo also attended for lunch.
The rotavirus vaccine provides the opportunity to reduce the number of children dying every day from diarrhea disease caused by rotavirus.
But this month, pharmaceutical giant GlaxoSmithKline said manufacturing challenges had led to a shortfall of 4 million doses of the rotavirus this year, as well as delays in delivery. According to Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, the company already said it would reduce deliveries of the rotavirus vaccine by 10 million a year between 2022 and 2028. Moses Njoku, a research fellow at Nigeria's National Institute for Pharmaceutical Research and Development, says a shortfall should not be a challenge to Nigeria.
The issue of them pulling out shouldn't be a threat to a country like Nigeria if we actually use our internal potential. Nigeria is beginning to see the need to start indigenous efforts to start research and production, development of vaccines, as well as production of known vaccines.
Njoku also says authorities must take delivery of the rotavirus vaccines in batches to avoid waste.
If care is not taken, they will not be imported at the right time, maybe at the expiry of 3 months or 6 months, why would they ship to you? So eventually you won't even use up to $10,000. And you have paid the money. The supply chain management system is also very poor.
For now, authorities will be trying to get as many children vaccinated as possible. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
That's all we prepared for you this Thursday. We now leave you with Hard Life Avenue Stars and the song Kelele. Avenue Stars and the song Kelele. I'm your host, John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.